Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is John Batchelor, a conversation with Nick Parker of the University of Wisconsin at Madison about a program over several hundred years initiated by the U.S. government towards the Native Americans, the indigenous people, and their land. In this instance, it's fractionated land. Nick describes it very carefully, fractionated land. The end result is the Native American indigenous peoples are not able to use their own land. There's so much abuse here that it's astonishing. The thing that most compels me to say what is the U.S. government's Bureau of Indian Affairs doesn't know who all the owners are. Doesn't know. After 150 years of administering it as the guardian. Here's Nick Parker, University of Wisconsin at Madison, on fractionated land. More of this later this week.
Fractionated ownership is messy, and it applies to roughly 25% of the land on American Indian reservations, much of it which holds some energy resources. But fractionated land stems from the General Allotment Act of 1887, and that was the act that was set to privatize land on American Indian reservations. So it subdivided some reservations and then allotted the land to individuals. Over time, some were declared competent and capable. Some weren't. Some lands were not allotted. Others were. But the point of that legislation, at least the recorded purpose, was to help Native Americans become farmers and assimilate into mainstream culture, and private ownership was the way to help them do that. But it was a rocky program, and over time, observers were noting that a lot of land was flowing out of Native American ownership, and a lot of Native Americans who had allotted land were not becoming farmers. And so the position of the federal government started to change in the 1920s. So was that 30 years after the program was initiated? And eventually allotment was terminated. That was in 1934 with the Indian Reorganization Act. And so, well, what are you going to do with the land that had been allotted, but the owner hadn't been declared competent and capable, so it had never been released into private ownership? Well, for that land, it's remained in federal trusteeship, and all of the heirs of the original allottee have over time gained an ownership interest. So over time, that's compounded to say first one owner, then four owners, 8, 16, and what have you. And so today, the average allotted trust parcel that was never privatized has about 15 owners. But the range is enormous. I mean, the range can go to 50, 100 owners of a fractionated parcel. This is of like a 160-acre piece of land, 80-acre piece of land. And so two things have to happen for that land to be utilized in a way that could be productive for the owners. And the first thing is the owners have to agree. And, you know, I come from a big family, and I know that I would have a hard time reaching agreement with just my brothers and sisters, let alone cousins, you know, great grandnephews, what have you. So that's one thing that has to happen if you wanted to use that land, say, for an energy project. The other thing that has to happen is you'd have to know who all the co-owners are. Well, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the guardian here, is responsible for the record keeping, and it's supposed to know who has ownership interest, and often it doesn't know. So how are you going to utilize land if you can't even find who the owners are, and those owners have to agree, and that, the U.S. government has really failed in its guardian role there. In fact, it was sued in Cobell litigation and lost because of its mismanagement in this regard.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.